What is up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, your show for the Are We Open Yet? I'm King Kaz. I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
It's good to be back doing weekly shows. I think we were in a period there where we're doing like an episode every 2 weeks, coming up with stuff to fill in the gaps.
You also have to admit our shows have mostly been, are they open yet?
Are we coming back? Yeah.
Are they NBA? Are they shooting? No, not shooting yet. All right, cool.
Yeah. And yeah, just cause there's so many details to work out. And I think it's important to talk about this stuff just because these are tremendous undertakings to form together leagues like this. I mean, even just forming together like an intramural league is hard, and even just getting people to show up for your goddamn intramural games, people on your own team, is hard. Getting people to do anything is hard. So this is, there's a lot of stuff to work out, and I think the people that are coming back first should be applauded, like all of the leagues around the world that have got their shit together, mostly because their countries have their shit together.
Kind of as a quick rundown, for the majority of the world, everybody was shut down due to COVID. A lot of things have kind of slowly taken precautions with some kind of safety measures in place to reopen their sports entertainment. Korea has done some things that we've talked about. Europe has been kind of slowly but surely getting back into soccer, which is their kind of big thing, and getting that kicked off in their ways, which we haven't fully explored, and we'll probably go into that at some point because they've done some things that are pretty interesting. And now we've come around, we've talked about the things here that are going on in America as far as sports reopening. And we do have, just kind of in this show today, a few more things to run down in our rundown. So let's get into it. So first we have the NWSL. That's going to be looking to return around June 27th. Yeah. So what are kind of the details going into the National Women's Soccer League returning?
They're just going to do a tournament in Utah, and that's it. I think they're, as of right now, they're doing that instead of the normal season that they would have had. There's no plans to do anything after this yet, but maybe depending on the response to this, maybe they might. But for now, this is it. And they are the first U.S. team sport to return. Mm-hmm. At least when it comes to like teams playing on a field. Maybe you could argue NASCAR is a team sport, but it's. There's a lot of talk now about the MLS being the first U.S. team sport to return, because they're coming back July 8th. But I think that's very dismissive of women's sports to just ignore the NWSL and the fact that they're coming back first.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to call attention to that because it's just... Even in the middle of a pandemic, when there's no other sports going on, the one sport comes back as a women's sport, and then everybody just ignores it. So I don't know. We got to do a better job of talking.
One step at a time, man. One step at a time. We're pushing for racial equality. Then we can do women, and then we'll maybe circle back around to gay rights. Maybe
It doesn't have to be in order. Like, I mean, if anything, like the people that have in sports that have spoken out most for racial equality in recent years has been the WNBA. So
yeah,
it's like.
Oh man, we can't win for losing out here. All right, so we have women's soccer coming back on the 27th, like you said. So this is going to be happening in Utah. They're calling it the Challenge Cup. It's going to be a 9-team group play-in, whittle down the 8 teams to a tournament, and it's kind of just going to go from there. I'm kind of excited to see this. I think at this point, I'm kind of excited to see anything, and I'm not being dismissive of women's soccer. I think, and I've said this before, women's soccer right now, especially in the U.S., is better than men's soccer. And speaking of men's soccer, they're going to be coming back on July 8th. There's no big details going on here. They've just kind of have announced these things. I know a lot of teams have, especially because I follow DC United and the New York Red Bulls, they've been talking about getting a chance to get back out on the field and stuff like that. But I haven't really seen much fanfare around it, so we'll see if people even realize that men's soccer is back. Going on to one of the big things, we were talking about baseball the other day and how we might be heading into a realm where there is no baseball going into the next year. So where we are now, the negotiations are over, and the commissioner must now set a plan. So how did we get here? How did we get from almost no baseball to now we have to figure out baseball?
So I didn't actually realize that the commissioner, the ultimate fallback plan here was just the commissioner decides and everybody just goes along with it. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what the Players Association has agreed to. At this point, they're not going to agree to playing a longer season for less pay. Mm-hmm. I think what this comes down to is, the estimated season that MLB is going to come up with is probably somewhere around 50 games. Okay. And if you look at all the different plans, it's basically they can afford with the TV money to pay for about 50 games, to pay the players at full salary prorated for about 50 games. And, mm-hmm. And every single plan that they've tried to give at that they've tried to send out to the Players Association has been some variation of that amount of money. They set that amount of money and they divide it up among more games or fewer games or whatever, but they haven't deviated from that. And so the Players Association is like, nah, fuck you. We're not agreeing to any of this. If we're going to do this, then it's because you guys make us and that's it. And so they're probably just going to play those 50 games and labor relations between the Players Association and the league are not very good going into all the negotiations they have to do for the collective bargaining agreement next year. It's going to be bad. We're probably going to get this shortened season and then next year and then a serious labor stoppage, whether it's a strike or a lockout.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So going on from there, we kind of have a weird reverse in the NBA where we were pretty sure we were getting basketball and now we might not be getting basketball.
Yeah, we jumped the gun on this. When we said that all the players on the Players Association call that agreed to the plan that the league came up with last year, that was wrong. They essentially just agreed to keep talking. And then so as they've kept negotiating, I think they've unearthed a couple problems. And part of it has to do with just the context of returning to play among all the social unrest with a lot of black NBA players who have taken a lead as community leaders on this. Some of them are questioning whether it's right to go back to play, to kind of take themselves out of the community and everybody go sequester themselves in Orlando to go make money for a bunch of rich, predominantly white owners. Mm-hmm. And some of them have also taken the opposite approach of like, this is, you know, we can use this platform for change while everybody else is, while there's very few sports to watch, then all eyes are going to be on us. We can use this to take a stand. So it's not a cut and dry thing, but these conversations are happening. I think there's initially a lot of focus on Kyrie Irving being one of the ringleaders to this resistance. I think some of that is just due to his reputation and haha, flat earth or Kyrie Irving is at it again. But I think he's also positioning himself as like a voice to raise a lot of concerns for people that might not have felt comfortable speaking out against LeBron and all these other top athletes who do want to come back and play. Mm-hmm. So there were also
health like issues, because like we said, so there are two major things going on, right? There is the social unrest that is happening with all the protests that are still continuing to go on, and the possibility of the next big wave of the COVID-19 coronavirus. So, and that those two things, I think, which are kind of the culmination of most of what the pushback was here, are very viable things to push back against.
Yeah, but also part of it is like nobody can agree on the their stance, because there's some people that like they're concerned about the bubble, and some people want to be able to leave the bubble, and so like nobody can agree on how strict the bubble needs to be, and people are on opposite ends of that. People are on opposite ends of the protest spectrum. So I think what they're probably going to end up with is just if everybody makes the choice individually, if you want to play, then you play. And if not, then you don't get paid for it. But I don't know. You can't say nobody's going to hold it against him, because fans are going to be shitty about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, for Kyrie Irving himself, he's injured, so he wasn't going to play anyways. But there are other players. There's a difference between the guys making $40 million a year and the guys making minimum salaries at $500,000 a year. So there's massive differences across various spectrums here that they have to work out. Even young players, players like De'Aaron Fox for the Kings, or Jason Tatum, or basically everybody from the 2017 draft class that is a successful player, they're on the cusp of getting contract extensions. And if they get injured during this little 8-game return to play, then that can ruin their chance of getting a massive contract extension. So those guys are looking for insurance, like actual, like legal insurance for returning to play. And so, I mean, that's a legitimate concern and a legitimate grievance as well. So, a lot of details to work out, about a month or so to work it out. So maybe this is, I feel like they're further along than baseball is, where baseball is just flat out, both sides of the fence are saying fuck you to each other. And one thing that the NBA does have hanging over the players' heads is the ability to trigger a force majeure provision if they don't end up playing. So if that happens, they can cancel the existing collective bargaining agreement and trigger a lockout, and then also try to reduce the players' share, which is currently 50-50. But yeah, if they can try to argue that next year we might not have fans in the stands, so therefore the players should be getting a smaller cut of the overall revenue. And so there's a lot. I think it's not a big threat right now, but it's just kind of a threat that's in the back of everybody's head. But I don't think the league wants to go that route, because then they're going to burn a lot of bridges like baseball has done.
Yeah. And it's kind of bigger, you know, for that than anything else, and especially in the NBA, right? They want to hold on to that image more than anything. All right. That's been a rundown. Let's move on to some of our major stories of the week. So we got some hockey things to talk about. When you wrote out the doc, you kind of called this section of stories social justice stories. So let's talk about what's going on with the NHL.
Yeah, I mean, this actually isn't done by the NHL, but it's by a couple NHL players, current and former. The Hockey Diversity Alliance is a new organization formed by Evander Kane, Akeem Aliyu. Those guys are the heads, but there's five other current and former players that are involved in this. And this is going to work independently of the NHL, but it's going to advocate for racial equality when it comes to hockey, which I think a lot of us think of traditionally as a very white sport. So I think, our first two stories here are basically two sports that don't traditionally cater to Black audiences, trying to rectify that, essentially. And, although in this case, it's not the sport itself, it's the players doing it independently. There's no reason why they can't work with the NHL itself. I think it's a good idea to try to keep it separate, just because then you don't have the league itself trying to manipulate things for its own image. In a way, this is kind of it's kind of a union in a way, but it's a special interest group that can help Black players, and then also work with the league whenever necessary.
Yeah, I know some other players kind of put together a video package, which this article talks about. Sidney Crosby, PK Subban, and a few other people kind of did their. I don't know a better word to call it other than they're kind of like, hey, we're here, we're kind of listening, kind of thing. The video is titled "In Union." In union, there is strength. So it's like their show of solidarity, kind of thing. And you're going to get a lot of those things in a lot of these situations, celebrities making videos to kind of talk about what's going on and how they're going to try to be a part of the solving of the issues rather than just not, or it's just kind of sometimes it's a little weird, but I think here with these two things, it's just showing that hockey is aware of itself and the things going on around it.
Yeah, I think if you wanted to put this on a spectrum, it's probably less, not as strong as the response from white NFL players, but it's a response, I guess. So
So DJM does ask the question, like what has been like kind of the response from like white hockey players, and for the most part, it's been, especially around the in unity their strength thing. There have been a lot of like, cool, kind of that's the right thing to do, but also that is also partially sponsored by the NFL. Or at least the NFL kind of is like, yeah, cool on that. And I think right now it's kind of hard to say anything else.
I just feel like the unity response is like, it's like a 2 years ago sort of thing.
Yeah.
The unity response is a couple of years ago. The modern response now is to acknowledge that if we're going to talk about unity, we have to talk about how much we're failing the Black members of this unified community. I don't want to say white NHL players have been silent, but I think part of it is the fact that we don't pay a whole lot of attention to what NHL players say in general, as just the popularity of the sport. But I think, they're around the realm of where baseball players are, and where the NFL was a couple of years ago, I would say. I don't want to say they're as resistant as like NFL owners were a couple of years ago, but it's weird to kind of peg them. But I think that's where they are. If I try to make an assessment.
Yeah. And I think sometimes things that tend to stand on the world stage a little bit more tend to be a little more willing to admit their weirdness around certain topics and certain things. Like, so the NFL is kind of always a big proponent in the Olympics and things like that. So they kind of tend to stand on the world stage they tend to stand on the world stage sometimes. So you kind of have to understand yourself.
Part of it is not greatly.
Like you can still kind of be shitty on the world stage.
Well, because it's the countries that that hockey is predominantly popular in. It's all these northern countries with predominantly white populations. Even in the United States, hockey is more popular in the northern states, where the black population is less. And so you get this weird undercurrent where it's not, where you don't get the explicit racism of the, that you might find in as you go further south, but you do get that weird undercurrent of every black player in the NHL is kind of an other person. And so that's, there's weird racial implications around that. So I think having a group dedicated to hockey, to discussing that within hockey is a good thing.
It's different from
what black players in the NHL might experience or black players in the NBA might experience. In those leagues, black players are the majority. They make up the majority of the league, even though they make up a minority everywhere else. So it's not weird to see a black NBA player, and it shouldn't be weird to see a black hockey player, but people treat it like it's weird. So because it's uncommon. So I think we'll have to wait and see on this and see how serious the NHL and is about responding to this group and responding to initiatives to increase the league's overall diversity.
All right, so let's kind of talk about something that has been the topic of, I think, pretty much the past 2 weeks. So NASCAR, I don't really know if there was any previous discussions to this, but I'll start it from where I know it, and we'll kind of go through the details. So NASCAR has decided to ban the Confederate flag at all NASCAR events. So going forward, they will not allow people to bring in or allow drivers to have on their cars, uniforms, in their pits, Confederate flags, which has kind of been one of the things of people talking about having removed from things for a very long time. And this kind of came as a surprise to a lot of people, that something like NASCAR, which is very steeped in the South, and very much represented by kind of the southern states just in general, which have been fighting either for or against the Confederate flag, but for NASCAR as an entity to now ban this when a majority of their fan base, as we just talked about with hockey, comes from those southern states, is really interesting. And kind of NASCAR right now has very few black drivers in it, in any of its series.
It's Bubba Wallace. Well,
so there's Bubba Wallace, who is kind of the most well known in the Cup series or in the stock car series. There's maybe was or are one or two in the truck series throughout history, but a very predominantly southern white sport. So the discussion has become, is this publicity? Is this kind of a stand of solidarity, or is this a too little too late?
And I think the stance that that we've kind of taken on this show has been, even if it's late, kind of glad you're here, type of stance. Like, if better late than never, in a way. I think there's, you know, I mean, racing is racing. So if you want to be a fan of racing, there shouldn't be anything racially that prevents you from being a fan of racing. I mean, you know, Kaz, you are a black NASCAR fan, and that shouldn't be a rare thing, is what I'm saying. And
Kaz, let me ask you a question. Would you go to a NASCAR event?
I think even before this, it depends on where it was. There are some I would feel a lot better about going to than others, depending on the state and the area. You know what I mean?
Right. So you're in Maryland. And so, like, what are the closest races to you? Or, like, what are the closest races north of you, I should say?
Oh, God. No, they're all going to be south. There's, I think, Virginia, which even there, I think there are races that are held in Virginia. And even there, it's kind of sketch. Like, even going that close is kind of sketch. There are places probably further out, like probably in like the Carolinas or like Louisville and stuff like that, or even Texas, where I'd probably feel a lot better about going to a NASCAR race than I would going to, which would be the closest one, which would be Virginia.
Yeah, so I think that kind of says it right there, but. I mean, not that you represent all black fans, but there's a sentiment there. There's a feeling there that if you try to go to any of these events, it's kind of sketch, and it might be unsafe, or at the very least, it'll be uncomfortable. And the Confederate flag is one of those things that has traditionally made it very uncomfortable. So at the very least, hopefully it'll be less uncomfortable to go to one of these events. Maybe there are some people that are on the line of like, oh, the Confederate flags are gone, these overt symbols of racism are gone, maybe I might think about going. At the very least, I think I've seen a couple people online, again, not a representative sample, but people saying like, I might be more likely to pay attention to the sport now that they've taken a stand on at least the most egregious symbols of racism in the sport, and not, you know, embracing it like they used to. It has been a weird response, but it's also put NASCAR kind of in the discussion of like, you know, what are different sports doing? What are different organizations doing? If even NASCAR is doing this, then why are our governments why are other institutions not taking at least the steps that an organization that has traditionally had a sordid racial history like NASCAR, why can they not even do what NASCAR is doing? I think it kind of raises the lower bar for everybody. And yet there are some people within NASCAR that can't even clear that bar, like Ray Ciccarelli, who is a NASCAR truck series driver. This week is the first week anybody's ever heard of him.
Even NASCAR.
Even in NASCAR. He's going to retire because he's very upset that they banned the Confederate flag. So, And he's going with all the traditional, like, oh, free speech, this and that, and all that bullshit. Private organization, they can do what they want. And if they decide that, hey, this symbol that is annoyingly prevalent in our institution needs to go away in order to get more fans of other races to show up to our events, then we should do that. Ray Ciccarelli, I think he hasn't finished in the top 10 in any race.
No, he's never won a race.
He's certainly never won a race, but basically he's just kind of this isn't like a top driver saying like, I'm done with this. This is,
I mean, as NASCAR put it, I had to Google him to figure out who he was, which is what their tweet said to him when he said he was quitting.
That was NASCAR. Fake one. That was a real one.
Oh, no. That was real. That was from a NASCAR, one of the NASCAR Twitter accounts, like official Twitter accounts, that they were like, we don't know who you are. It's fine.
All right. Wow. So, yeah, it's, you can maybe say this is not enough. I don't know.
I will take it right now where, obviously, a lot of people are going to do things to try to put themselves on the right side of history. It is a step in the right direction. Where we go from here, however, is going to kind of show what happens, right? Because if people like Ray Ciccarelli and other fans who have been tweeting out the ban or boycott NASCAR hashtag become a loud majority, if that then goes to happen and NASCAR cannot start to grasp at other fan bases and start to bring in a more diverse crowd, they may take a step back if it starts to hurt their bottom line in earning potential. And that's when we will see where it goes from there. Right.
The thing is, NASCAR's popularity was already diminishing with that traditional fan base. So I think growth is the only way, and reaching out to other people besides their traditional white fan base is like the only way they can survive, period.
Yeah.
Because NASCAR is not the only racing organization in the world that we have available to watch. And not that, in any organizations are doing much better when it comes to racial diversity, but, Formula One has a black driver at the head of their at the head of their marketing and at the head of their sport, period. And he might be the best driver ever. So this is there are other things to watch if NASCAR continues to have this reputation and trying to move away from it and distance themselves from that stigma is, I think, the only way they can survive if they want to compete among other racing organizations. So that's, it's a step in the right direction, and I think we should acknowledge it as that.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of the best ways to possibly go about growing and diversifying your sport, right? Because now you can start to, and because NASCAR has always been this family brand, right? And even in the way NASCAR is held and kind of presented, it has always kind of been this family-oriented thing from its youth racing level, which they do support a lot of youth racing in a lot of different places, up to the Cup Series, right? Which is the end-all be-all, which is kind of one of the things that also, not the whole family aspect, because that would be weird, but the whole kind of like way NASCAR kind of tracks its lineage, right, is they'll have these packages on a driver that will show them from these kart races when they were 5 years old up to, the time they got into kind of a more souped up kart to the time that they did a couple of truck series races to their first NASCAR race. And I think if NASCAR kind of wants to keep that branding and kind of be this American family branded thing, you could kind of almost go about like, hey, we could start to do more youth races in some of these northern communities, right? And start to involve more people in this. Because I knew a lot of kids growing up who went and did kart racing from the inner city. Like, it was a thing that they got into, and it was weird to me. Initially when I was a kid to see other kids going and doing like kart racing, and I didn't understand it at first, and now I do. It's kind of this fun thing that you can do. The kart racing initially is kind of cheap, but it could be that path that helps grow the sport more, because NASCAR does give a lot of money to these things. So it definitely is a see where it goes from here.
Yeah. Any sport that requires a lot of gear, I think you're going to see, you kind of see already that racial divide in any sport that is expensive to start with, from a youth perspective. Like we even talked about on the esports fighting game episode, where like there's a difference between like who can own a PC and who has enough money to own a PC versus who has enough money to buy a PS4, and that trickles into the demographics of the communities that you see playing League of Legends versus the communities that you see in fighting games. And you know, and the same thing is true in the difference between who plays basketball and soccer, and who plays sports like hockey or racing or other very expensive sports. So these outreach initiatives, like if they're really serious about this, that's where they need to go, because it might not pay dividends tomorrow, might not get you the PR boost immediately, but that's when you're going to start seeing more diversity trickle into the sport, not just among the drivers, but among the crew members, among the staff, among the executives. That's where you get people into, you know, you'll see those dividends pay out 10, 20 years down the line when it comes to diversity. So
yeah,
I think if you get really serious, that's where you have to go.
Yeah. And even on the equality thing, right, I want to see them push a little bit further, as they kind of started to do with like when they started to have women, which it was not that long ago, start to race in the Cup Series, right? It kind of became this thing where it was just like, hey, here's Danica Patrick. Hey, you know, here, win or lose, like, hey, huh? Like, and I don't want to see it become this thing where to try to stay on the right side. Yeah, where it just was like, hey, Bubba Wallace, right? Huh? Like, we got our one. We're just going to keep fucking, for some reason, putting them in front of the camera. Like, I want to just see more shit actually happen, especially on both sides. Like, I want to start seeing more female drivers. Like, there have been a couple who have come and gone, but like, I want to see more legitimate female drivers, and I want to just see more people given more opportunities. And you know what? Like you said, not even just as drivers. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see more diversity in crew chiefs. I want to see, like, I mean, there are surprisingly a lot of women on pit crews, but like, that has also been a weird realm of like, fight back, because it's kind of a boys club. But like, that is also the kind of shit I want to see go away, like, in general, like, and just see more diversity in those things, and give them, and more people just get opportunities.
Yeah. So from one symbol to another, we've got a statue getting toppled, in this case, not a Confederate leader statue, but just the statue of a former owner, Jerry Richardson of the Carolina Panthers. It's kind of had a somewhat problematic history when it comes to race and sexual harassment. DJM asks if there's a very big difference, and that's a very good question. Richardson sold the team to David Tepper, I think. I don't know if it was last year or the year before. I don't remember the exact timeline on that, but part of the sale was that the statue needs to stay in place. The one exception was if there was a public safety issue. And now that there are protests around the country where statues are being torn down, the team was able to argue that it is a safety issue to keep that statue up, because somebody's going to come tear this down and somebody can get hurt. So so the Panthers were able to cleverly maneuver around that to get the statue of a figure that has traditionally, I think he's kind of been a symbol, at the very least, to put it the most nicely, he is a symbol of the traditional wing of NFL owners. His name always pops up when it comes to people being resistant to change and being resistant to players speaking out and all that. So
I've kind of gone back and forth on the whole statue thing. And I think I've settled on, I think I've mentally settled on a place where I understand why, right? I understand why. And I want to preference that. But I feel like a lot of these things, the Confederate statues and removing statues of people who have done shady things and shit like that is
taking names off buildings.
Yeah, taking names off buildings is weird in a certain light. Like, the names off buildings to a certain thing, I understand, but it's also all just blowback. For me, I would much rather everything be given better context going into the future, right? And this is something I take from someone else, is rather than removing these things and then trying to pretend like these things don't exist, because they do, and even the things that exist that we are pseudo proud of, everything needs to be given context outside of the golden light that it has, because there are statues of people who right now in history are stand up for great things, but maybe 20, 30 years down the line, something else that they've done that is not great and that everyone knows is not great is going to echo more. And while these things do, a lot of them do echo terrible things, they should just be given that context, that that's what they echo and that's what they represent and that's what they are, because that's how we learn. If we keep pretending or trying to pretend like certain parts of history don't exist, we don't allow ourselves the space to have the conversations.
I think sorry, go ahead and finish.
No, that was it.
I think a big part of the discussion regarding the whole statue thing is like tearing them down doesn't erase history. There's still an opportunity to learn. Nobody's going to forget that Jerry Richardson was the owner of the Panthers for so many years. Because they tore down his statue. It'll probably still have a plaque somewhere in the building. I don't know. And anybody can look up Wikipedia and see that Jerry Richardson was at one point the owner of this team. And the same thing with all these Confederate generals getting their statues torn down, all these Confederate leaders, whatever, that they'll still be in the history books. They'll still be in the museums. It's more about the symbol. And it's more about the message that taking the symbol away represents. And I think, make no mistake, it is still just a small message. Mm-hmm. It is not systemic change to tear down a statue. That's not going to help. That's not going to help Black people vote. That's not going to help. That's not going to stop cops from brutalizing the Black community. That's not going to change any of that, but it's, in a way, it's a signal of intent. It's a signal that, like, we are going to stop at least celebrating these people. There's a part of me that does, DJM is on the side of just tear them all down. And I think there's a part of me that kind of goes back and forth between tear them down and leave these up as a symbol to our shame, as kind of in the context thing of what you said, but like as a memory of like, hey, at one point this thing was a symbol, was something people actually celebrated, and that's a shameful part of our past. But yeah. I also feel like that nuance gets lost among people when it's just a statue. So I feel like that's nuance that is better designed for a history book or better designed for a Wikipedia article or a news article or something like that, rather than just here's a statue of a Confederate general looking kind of cool. Are you going to put up the right signage next to it that shows like this is actually supposed to be a symbol of our shame and not supposed to be a symbol of our lionization of this person? All that gets kind of lost. A statue, to bring it back to sports, like a statue of Jerry Richardson and a statue of Michael Jordan in front of the United Center, like that, those two things are statues and people might equate them to be the same sort of context, but they're not. They're two separate things. And so I think everybody's deciding now statues are for people we celebrate. Once history changes and we reevaluate ourselves and decide we don't want to celebrate this person anymore, then time to get rid of the statue. Let's put something else in place. Put somebody else in Carolina Panthers history on a statue. Put Kerry Collins up there. Put Cam Newton there.
I think it's too soon for Cam Newton.
I'm trying to think back to it. Throughout Panthers history and there's, yeah. And I don't know why I fixated on Kerry Collins, but if it's a celebration of football, like I always feel weird when we celebrate owners in general too, mm-hmm. because like they're important. They kind of set the tone for the whole organization and you could definitely see the effects of a bad owner on a team, but in a way, the good owners are the ones that stay the most in the background and stay the most silent and let their sports people do their thing and then, you know, maybe stick on the community side. I don't know if you need statues to celebrate the owners because I think the organizations that are the best are the ones where you don't know who they are. And
a plaque and a photo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you get. And a shit ton of money. That's what you get for being an owner. You get 50% of the revenue at least. It's like, congratulations. You can build your own statue in your own fucking house.
Let's talk about this voter rights initiative that is being led by, which you kind of talked about a little bit earlier, a bunch of NBA players.
Yeah, I think LeBron James has definitely been one of those people that's always walked the walk when it comes to. Actually, I shouldn't say that because of all of his Hong Kong stuff, but at least locally, for the stuff that he really cares about, he's very much walked the walk. He built a school. Which has been pretty successful. And now I think after this past week and watching just the huge clusterfuck that happened in Georgia when it came to voting, just one of many clusterfucks going on in Georgia right now. LeBron is teaming up with Trae Young, who plays for the Atlanta Hawks, Skylar Diggins-Smith and Jalen Rose to form an organization called More Than a Vote, which is going to be a nonprofit aimed at protecting voting rights for Black Americans. The focus isn't just going to be on registration, because as we saw throughout the week, even just having a bunch of people register to vote, that doesn't, that helps. But if all those people end up in lines that take 4 hours long just to cast a vote, then mm-hmm. that's not going to, there's another bottleneck there in the process, and there's many bottlenecks along the way. And part of that education of where those bottlenecks are, I think is going to be part of this process too. So this isn't going to just focus on mass registration like a lot of these organizations do. It's going to focus on the entire system. I'm excited about this. I'm excited about this focus on voting just because it is the most traditional means of change. the one that kind of, at least all the people that say, like, why don't you make change through the system? Well, they're trying, and they run into many pitfalls along the way, but they're trying to do the best they can. It's also important to me just because I think it's important to, I mean, I just fucking love it when politicians do dumb shit and then lose their job because of it. So it's, you know, just from a vengeance perspective, like, then like that, it makes me happy to see people involved because then they are showing care and initiative around, around the stuff that affects their local community as well. So, I think voter disenfranchisement has been one of the strongest tools of oppression in this country. And seeing athletes that I think traditionally they don't really speak about voting until like around Election Day every year. But I think if they want to take a more active role like year round, then I think that's a great thing. I hope they do something when it comes to establishing more polling places in areas that traditionally have them closed, or that have been closed recently, as part of this overall voter suppression effort. I think if they can do things to sponsor them, get more volunteers out there, get more polling places set up so that people don't have to wait in line, or better education about how to navigate the system for getting a mail-in ballot, that would be great as well. As somebody who has lived in California for most of my life and has never actually had to stand in line to ever vote, I think it's so hard to see the rest of the country struggle with that. And, you know, with something that has been just granted to me. So basically, without any fight at all. It's just such an overt form of oppression that I'm glad to see athletes get involved in fighting back on that, because like it or not, athletes are celebrities. They're local celebrities. They're representatives of their community. And when they get involved, people listen. So I'm pretty happy about this. And mostly happy because I'm happy that LeBron is involved, because LeBron usually takes these things and doesn't half-ass them when he decides to do something community related. It's not something he's just slapping his name on. And I think hopefully we'll see dividends with this in the long run. All right. I think that's all of our social justice stories. Now we got a couple of random stories to throw in. If you attended the Rose Bowl this year, there's a pretty good chance that you were part of a facial recognition and advertising test by the Visibility organization. That's VSBLTY. They put up a bunch of signs around the building that managed to grab about 30,000 different faces, and track how they looked at advertisements and I think that's, facial recognition is kind of a hot topic now, especially in the overall context of policing and whether police departments should be allowed to be using facial recognition tracking, and what they might end up doing with all that power. So this is an interesting wrinkle among all that. At the very least, all these people that had their faces tracked did not consent to any of this, or if they did, it was probably just a tiny fine print.
Do we know if this was like a blurb anywhere on your ticket amongst all the other shit that's on there, or somewhere on a website that or like one sign somewhere 12 miles away that you could see if you know where you're looking and somebody told you? Kind of thing. Like this shit is always so weird, man, and this is why you always have to kind of sometimes, and I know, look, I don't do it, I know a lot of people don't do it, most of us don't do it, but sometimes this is why at these big public event things, you have to read the fine print about like what they can and can't do, you know, like,
yeah, because this wasn't even in the interest of public safety. It's just for advertising, and it's, you know, and you know, these 30,000 people didn't even know this was happening. So, yeah, wear a mask, DJ says. It's this is if you're going. I mean, this was before COVID, so if but you know, now whenever they do open up these events to fans, bring a mask. I mean, wear a mask because. You're going to need to do for safety anyways. So that's just one other reason to do that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Southern California college football, if you are a USC fan, you are now allowed to remember Reggie Bush again.
it's, okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean that these are just like the weird NCAA penalties, you know, vacating all these titles. Reggie Bush took gifts from two different sports marketers a long time ago, and he's probably not the first person to do that, probably not the last, but one of the people that got caught. So. Because of that, USC had to vacate a bunch of titles. They had to go on probation for 4 years, which then I think included a postseason ban. And then on top of that, the university disassociated itself from Bush, despite the fact that he had one of the greatest college football seasons ever. So it's. Everybody has to erase their memory of Reggie Bush, but now that's been rescinded. I think the NCAA recently ruled that no disassociation can last for longer than 10 years. So now Reggie Bush is welcomed back into the University of Southern California community. I guess there's no word yet on whether he's going to get his Heisman Trophy back, which he had to return, but it's also one of those weird things that kind of goes beyond putting an asterisk next to a title next to something in the record books. Like you just have to pretend that this person didn't exist for so long. But then after 10 years or so, you're allowed to remember that they exist again. And it just seems like such I don't want to say it's a nothing penalty because I'm sure it must have sucked from a social perspective to not be involved in that, but then again, I haven't really done anything for my school, and it's been more than 10 years since I left either. So,
I mean, yeah, but at the same time, what are you supposed to do? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's weird shit that people hold on to, and this was one of those things that I think even at the time, right? Everyone said you can't erase those accomplishments, right? Yeah. Like there is no take back on something someone physically accomplished.
And that everybody watched.
Right. And that everybody watched, that everybody know, that still made him a marketable name going into the NFL. All you're doing is kind of putting a pause on the history book. Like, but at the same time, I don't know. It's so weird at the time that was what they thought of as a penalty, and it's so weird that now they're trying to be like, hey, like, we can celebrate this. It's like, who cares at this point? Like, he's already gone on to the NFL. He's already kind of done what he's going to do there. And
he's already retired from the NFL. He's now a college football commentator.
Yeah. And
so, like... Yeah, I mean, his face is on college football broadcasts every week, so, like, you already can't erase the guy, so, like,
yeah.
But you just had to pretend like he wasn't a part of USC for all these years. You just had to remember that he was good, and he was good somewhere, and
okay.
at some point, but, you know, like, where did this guy come from? I know I'm kayfabing it a little bit, but, like, yeah. It's... but, like, that's what the penalty is, essentially, so, like, if you have to kayfabe a penalty, then what worth is the penalty to begin with? I feel like the punishments for the school were enough. If they were like, even if they're representative of a shitty system to begin with.
I don't know. I think if anything, you put a team on probation, you maybe remove some of their ability to scout top prospects, and you move on with your day. That's it. Because those are the things that are actual punishments in the time that it matters. Everything else doesn't matter. Like, all you've done is delay their history book, or all you've done is make it weird when people are walking down that hallway and they're like, why is there that one weird spot with all the other pictures? Why doesn't that spot have, oh, because that's where Reggie Bush probably goes. It's just dumb, man.
Yeah. Just for a couple gifts.
You know what, this goes, you know what, put this next to the statue things. You can't erase history. It already happened. Just give it context. Just be like, here's Reggie Bush. He played a lot of great games here. He also fucked up.
Little bit.
Yeah.
Just a tiny. It's not. Wasn't worth any of this.
God.
All right. Angel Hernandez, a guy who apparently fucks up a lot, because the only time I really hear his name or see his name is when people complain about umpires in baseball. So he's in a little bit of hot water because he stayed on a call and eavesdropped on a call that was investigating an incident in one of his games. I guess they interviewed him and then and then told him to drop off the call, and then he didn't drop off the call, which I feel like that's partially MLB's fault for that.
Right. How do you not have control of your call system? What are you doing over there? How backwards are you? I can call 10 people right now and I can pick and choose who is no longer in that call. All right. I didn't hear you tell me to hang up. That's my defense.
Well, I think they did. And then he tried to argue that after he got caught, he tried to argue that he didn't know that he was. He tried to claim ignorance on this. And
as he should.
Guys, what kind of person would just listen to people talk for like an hour and not really say anything? Who would do that? This is just awful. I unbelievable that someone would just listen.
Well, on that note, thank you all for listening for this show for the last hour. Head on over to sportsodds.com if you want to listen to more hours of us talking. If you want to just read instead, you can head on over there and check out our show notes with all the links to all the stories that we talked about. Maybe that'll hit a little bit differently than our voices. If you want to converse with us on Twitter or just eavesdrop on our feeds, you can head on over to twitter.com/JVZ for me, King Kaz, or at call me DJM for DJM, and patreon.com/sportsoddsandends if you want to get early access to some of our special episodes. And you can listen to us more there and support us financially. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.